I'm ready if you're ready. I'll just keep moving.
Yeah, but I don't want to hear banging and
like that.
Yeah, exactly. You are a podcaster's nightmare.
It would be like, wait a minute. No, I meant to say.
Like, I use Audacity, but I don't think it has a filter to take out elephant tromping through the room. They haven't built that technology yet.
Oh, gosh, that's funny.
Have you studied up on it?
Nah, but...
You crack out your books?
I didn't.
You got opinions anyway?
I got them. Don't give them.
You'd make a perfect politician. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, I got them. I'm going to give them.
Welcome to Black, White, and Blue in the South, a podcast discussing Democratic politics with a Southern flair. I'm Bill Kimmler.
I'm Jameel Brooks.
And we're coming to you from Greenwood, South Carolina, a little red county in a very red state. If you like what you hear, please leave a rating, tell your friends, or better yet, buy a ticket, buy 50, to the Carnell Drummond Maze Banquet on October 5th. That's the biggest annual fundraising event for the Greenwood County Democratic Party. You can always drop us a note at blackwhiteblueinthesouth@gmail.com. That email is in the show notes, along with links to articles and videos mentioned in today's episode. Hey, Jameel.
Hi, Bill.
Long time no see. It's been, what, 2 days?
Like two whole days.
How have you been?
Good. What about you?
I'm still recovering, to be quite honest, from our last episode.
Yeah.
Especially the revelation you made.
Oh.
That you are on Tim Scott's and Nikki Haley's texting list.
Well, that's...
That you're text buddies with them.
I'm embarrassed to say that they got my number somehow.
I'm still recovering. I'm beginning to wonder if you are kind of a mole.
I can't be. There's no way. I wouldn't be a good mole.
Just when you thought you knew a sister.
I know, right? She throws something in there. You don't ever have to worry about that from me on them two. I'll pass.
As we record this, we are hitting the highest temperature this year.
Oh my goodness.
In this part of South Carolina, and in fact, in other parts of the state, it's even worse.
Yeah.
This is hot, and it was funny to watch the climate deniers say, well, it's been hot before. And yes, it has been hot before. The problem is the rise and duration of these hot cycles have increased noticeably, not just within our lifetimes, but within this decade.
Yeah.
One of the common arguments made was, well, the Earth's been hot before, the geological shifts and cycles over time. And you know what? As a science guy, that's all true. It does.
Right.
The Earth goes through cycles. There were ice ages. There were heat ages. It goes up and it goes down. But the thing that they don't appreciate is that those cycles are across millions of years.
Millions.
So while, yes, temperatures do go up and down, they are spread over fractions of degrees in a decade, where it adds up over centuries and millennia.
Wow.
We're seeing that same effect in a generation. I'll tell you this. I remember being in the Northeast 25 years ago. We would get some serious snowstorms in the winter. It's part of the charm of being in the North.
Yeah.
Snowstorms, 6 feet of snow.
Oh, wow.
Five feet of snow. Yeah. I mean, you'd walk out and you're shoveling for hours. It's just the way it was.
Okay.
Right? And that was normal for this region of the country. But in just a decade or two, it got to a point where maybe we would get a snowstorm that winter, and usually only a couple of inches.
Whoa.
Like, you could see a noticeable change in a decade or 15 years.
I think it's noticeable. I don't know how we're still making excuses. There is something definitely going on, and it's not normal.
Now, you're native to South Carolina.
I am, but I don't know this South Carolina. This is a new South Carolina. I mean, I was driving the other day, and I was on the phone, and one of my girlfriends said, hey, does your car say 100 degrees? And I was like, nope. Julia says 99. Julia's my car. She says 99. And we are both just like, we cannot believe that that's where we are right now. Makes me wonder what fall will look like if we have one, or winter.
And yet I'm seeing articles saying that there is a migration of people moving from northern states to southern states during a time where the southern states are bearing the brunt of ecological and climate disasters. Just take a look at Florida. Take a look at beach erosions along North Carolina and South Carolina, homes falling into the ocean.
There was an article I read, I just perused this article, and it was talking about a certain species of penguins who lost a whole litter, if that's the term you want to use for their baby penguins. They watched the whole litter not survive because of the melting ice. So that's like almost a whole population of whatever species penguin this was that has been wiped out because of the melting ice. I'll have to send that to you because you're science-y.
No, that's okay. I don't think I need to see anything about dying baby penguins.
I'm just saying it's sad.
It is sad. I'm sad enough. You're going to make me sadder?
I'm sorry. I thought I'd share that. Baby penguins. Sad.
And now for the news.
For up-to-the-minute reports, stay tuned to this station. Now the news.
There was a headline in the Index Journal, that's the local paper here in Greenwood, South Carolina, going back to May, and the headline on the front page was, "Higher mortality numbers have many causes." What kind of mortality numbers, you ask?
Oh, what kind of mortality numbers?
Thank you for playing along. Did I not give you the script?
My apologies.
The type of mortality is about babies and mothers dying in South Carolina. Mm. And the very first sentence says, and no one is sure why.
Oh.
So they interviewed executives from Self Regional Hospital, okay, from DHEC, from other activist organizations. I'll just hit you with some quick facts.
Okay.
The Bureau of Maternal and Child Health shows South Carolina's infant mortality rate rose by 12% from 2020 to 2021. That's within a year. It rose 12% and has grown by almost 40% since 2017 for infants born to non-Hispanic Black mothers.
Huh.
So 12% overall,
okay,
40% for Black mamas.
Yeah.
They recognize these numbers are the highest in a decade. While the rest of the nation, infant mortality is dropping, South Carolina is rising. And the fact that Black infants are disproportionately suffering, dying at a rate 2.5 times of,
ooh,
white infants.
Okay.
Has left a lot of them scratching their head.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of numbers in this article, but those are the key ones that we need to focus on. But this article doesn't tell you why. Matt Logan, who's the president and CEO of Self, and
yes,
I've met Matt. He's a really good guy.
Really nice guy.
He says, quote, honestly, I don't know if we have a firm answer on that. Why would one demographic be affected more than others? No one knows. Quote. So that's an honest answer from a medical professional. But here's the kicker, Jamel.
Okay, I'm leaning in.
In 2021,
okay,
a House bill was introduced by Representatives Garvin, Robinson, Thigpen, Cobb, Hunter, Matthews, K.O. Johnson, Brawley, and Hill. Some,
okay,
of those names you may recognize.
I do.
They introduced a bill in March of 2021. It's called the South Carolina Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth Act.
Okay.
You know what this bill is about and what it proposes to do? Number one, create a study committee.
Oh.
To do what? Study,
yeah,
maternal mortality.
Get that answer.
And why non-Hispanic Black women are suffering and their children are suffering at a much higher rate than other,
huh,
demographics in South Carolina.
Okay, how did that go?
Over here, Matt Logan is scratching his head. We need to study this.
Yeah.
2023. 2021, there was a bill that was submitted saying, let's study this.
Mm.
So part one says this bill is to create a study committee to examine all these root causes. Two, they want this committee to report back. Three, here's going to be in the committee.
Okay. Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, administrators of hospitals, chair,
yes,
of the Senate Medical Affairs Committee, chair of the House Medical, Military, Public, and Municipal Affairs Committee, a wide variety of people to be on this committee.
Okay.
Four, let's staff the committee so they have the help that they need to get this together. And then at the end, provide a report back to us.
Okay.
That's all this bill was to study the very thing that the directors of hospitals are scratching their heads over today.
Wait. So do we need a drum roll for you to tell me what happened to this bill?
I'll give you one guess.
It didn't go anywhere.
It didn't. Now, It did pass the House by a narrow margin. Of course, local representative from Greenwood, John R. McCravey, voted against it.
You mean the one who's saving lives and he's happy?
Exactly. Okay. He apparently does not want to know the root cause of why there is a higher infant mortality rate among black mothers.
Somebody tell him, black and
brown
people.
But still it passed, but then it never did get brought to the Senate. A bill, as you know, has to pass both the House and the Senate before it is given to the governor to be signed into law. And it never got picked up by the Senate, and then it just died. Presto changeo, it's 2023, it's a new legislative cycle, so everybody has to start from scratch, and this bill is nowhere to be found this
year. Wow.
That strikes me as odd, and it also strikes me as a lost opportunity for the Index Journal to point out this fact. It was a fantastic article otherwise, full of facts and figures and interviews and everybody questioning, we don't know why.
Okay.
And you talk about what is legislation for. It's for moments like this, saying, let us as a state fund a study to find out why and provide these medical professionals with some guidance and directions or some clues as to where we might go.
You know, I have what I'm going to say is it may be indirect because the source is something that each individual will have to find, but there is a plethora, a large number of research that's been conducted within the black and brown communities as it relates to mortality rates that are associated with pregnancy. This is not new to us. I think one of the things that healthcare or clinicians will have to open their minds to realize is that for years, black and brown women have tried to explain to their clinicians things that are happening with their bodies, and they're discounted as if they're not valuable. And this goes with, there's another theory that I would throw out, but I'm going to hold that for right now. But what I will tell you is that I believe that there has always been this disposition that black and brown women are stronger and can handle the pain level and the tolerance. And let's just discount it because maybe they're just seeking attention. Well, we know our bodies just like every other woman would know their bodies. And when we're telling you these things are happening, they are happening. I'm going to give you an example that happened to me. And now note that I've been on the admin side of healthcare for a long time. I saw a provider. And I was telling this provider what I was feeling. And I said, hey, there's some respiratory issues going here. I know that I'm not myself. I feel like and this is post-COVID. My lungs has not returned to its capacity. I know that anxiety is high. There's some things that are not right. And I will never forget this provider for looking me in my face and discounting it. And this provider said, you're not as sick as some of the people that I've seen. And I said at that point, she most likely said that to the wrong person. But what I was going to do is do her a favor and leave at that point. That's the basic example, I guess, of what African-American women go through inside of doctor's offices. Does every doctor or health clinician act this way? No. But if you were to poll black and brown women, this topic is not amazing to us. It's not something that's going to catch us off guard. We are aware of it. We get it if we go in with a cough that's been persistent. It's no, try this and come back. And we are telling you, we know what is going on inside of our body, and it gets discounted every day.
I've heard the same thing from others. So hearing it from you is not the first time I've heard it, and you're just underlining what I've heard from others.
So when we say as a clinician that we don't know why it happens in one race versus the other, I would automatically want us to challenge ourselves and go to the treatment of the services that are occurring. Greenwood County Council discusses panhandling. This is a topic that I'm sure most people have been discussing in their homes. So I thought it was interesting that they've discussed this as well at the county council meeting. This took place on August the 18th. And I'm going to read you one quote that came from that meeting. We have countless resources available through churches and other organizations that handle this kind of thing. So I guess my question is, does council believe this is something we should have staffed to look at and see if maybe we can come up with some type ordinances? So here's the issue. In Greenwood, you may have noticed that there is an increasing number of panhandling occurrences that is happening.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yes.
Is it truly increasing? Because it's really the same spots I've seen over and over for years.
And the same people? Do you think it's the same individuals?
Well, I'm not taking photos or whatnot.
I have a mental note. And I noticed that from what I have seen, there are the same places. However, I am noticing that depending on the time of the day, the individual changes. So I'm wondering if it is that particular group. And then we go into how did they end up in Greenwood, which is a different discussion. But I think the number might be, but I'm noticing that it's different people. But you have almost assigned spots. So you know when you go, you're going to find, I remember one instance is at the old Walmart is what we refer to it as, where there was a husband and wife and a child. And whenever they would finish panhandling, they would go and get in their Cadillac and drive away. So, and the word had circulated through social media, don't give to this family because we've been watching them and they're not truly in need. So the reason I wanted this article to talk about it is because it is an issue in Greenwood. And here's where it tugs on your heartstrings. How do you know if you are given to a person who's truly in need and not able to work? Because I don't know if you know, but Greenwood has a whole bunch of help wanted signs out. Or are you given to someone who is just not going to work and is taking advantage of the system?
It's a difficult subject, and it's so easy to form an opinion, but too often those opinions are formed without information.
Yeah.
So truly, you don't want to be hard-hearted. You want to be compassionate. I have never been in such dire straits that I've been forced to go beg.
Yes.
You know, and thank God for that.
I was
going to
say,
and
I'm grateful.
You know, we're all, many of us are just one big medical catastrophe or car accident away from that, I know.
Yes.
So without knowing the individual stories or who these people are, your question of, is it a scam or is it truly a person in need is a valid one. Now, as far as the help wanted signs, let's say you are somebody who is in dire straits.
Okay.
There could still be a very wide chasm between that person and their ability to go get a job.
Correct.
Maybe they have a prior criminal record.
Or a mental health issue.
Maybe they've got mental health issues.
Correct.
Maybe they don't have transportation.
Correct.
Or some of the fundamentals that as an employer you would say, I'm not bringing this person into my shop or store or place of business. What did the county council arrive at in terms of a conclusion, does it say?
So they say they discussed it in July's meeting last year, and they approved the transfer of just more than $11,000 from the fire fund toward the completion of the backup center. They talked about additional funds being able to go towards the renovation of the Department of Social Services building. They talked about the resources that are available, but it appears that the overwhelming majority doesn't see it as a major issue.
Was there a vote taken or an action voted upon?
Not at that time. Okay. I don't see that in this one.
So it sounds like it was a topic of conversation brought up.
Again, because they discussed this July last year, and here it is back as a topic of a discussion again. I think this is one we can dive into further.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to be hosting a couple of the county council members.
Oh, great.
Not too long from
them.
Now. We can ask them their opinion.
That would be one of the questions. It mentions in here that because they're looking to form an ordinance, so if you are panhandling, that you will be charged, which might not be good. You're charging them and it might be beyond their ability.
On the national stage this past week, and I'm pretty sure you don't even want to talk about this, Jamel.
Oh, God. Here we go.
The Republican national debate happened.
Yeah.
And I know you didn't watch it.
I did not.
And here you are smiling as a result.
Yes.
Your mental health is probably in tip-top shape.
I put me first.
I watched it. It was Wednesday evening. And I woke up Thursday morning with a pounding headache.
See?
As if I had pounded beers and shots all night long.
Wow.
I was hung over from that debate.
Wow.
Just from watching it.
See? I'm glad I made the right decision.
I remember watching the 2015 presidential Republican debate, and that was the first one Trump was at, and he had all the regular statesmen around him, like Rubio, Graham, Ted Cruz.
Okay.
And a lot of us, my buddies and I across the nation, we watched out of curiosity just to see what kind of a train wreck it was, and Trump did not disappoint. It was a true train wreck.
Yes.
He broke all of the norms of a debate and really made a clown show out of it. And while it occurred, we laughed, we played drinking games, we took shots every time we heard a certain phrase. It was a fun event.
Yeah.
Without any thought that there'd be a chance that Donald J. Trump would be president of this country. And as I watched this debate from last week, it was a little more serious, even knowing this was going to be a train wreck of a debate.
Yeah.
I did not laugh. I did not take it lightly. I took notes. And I guess it was probably the stress of what I saw on that stage.
Knowing that
any one of them could become leader of the country had me very concerned.
Yeah. Someone mentioned today about how they have been able to tap into the inner hate, and that is what's driving the lifeline of these campaigns. That's unbelievable.
It really is. It really feels like that. So I'll share with you how it got started that evening. It was only broadcast on Fox News and other affiliated Fox networks.
Okay.
It was also simulcast on Rumble. Have you heard of Rumble?
I have not heard of Rumble. I almost might not want to, but go ahead.
Rumble is the MAGA YouTube.
Okay, great. That's why.
So it's a video streaming service, but it's meant for the extreme Republican conservative opinion. So it's a cesspool of videos.
Great.
So I started on Fox News. I don't subscribe to cable. I do everything digitally.
Okay.
So I went onto the Fox News website. They required me to enter in an email. Then they would send me a link to watch it. So I 5 minutes before the show, I put in my email. I have a burner email for these sort
of
things.
Got it. I was going to say, please do.
I don't want them texting my phone, Jamel.
Two.
And I never got the link.
Oh, wow.
I was refreshing my email inbox. Nothing.
You didn't make the cut.
I didn't make the cut. So I ended up on Rumble, and I had to put my computer through 10 antivirus sweeps afterwards.
Yeah.
But so I started watching it on Rumble. Rumble couldn't handle the load. It kept freezing up, buffering, kept delaying and stuttering. It was bad. About 15 minutes into it, I finally did get my email from Fox News.
Okay.
And so I ended up watching the rest of it on Fox. But right out of the gate, it wasn't a pleasant experience.
Okay.
It was really tough to separate out the, I would say, content of the questions and responses from the mannerisms and even some of the behaviors and just physical characteristics of the candidates. For example, DeSantis does not know what to do with his face.
What do you mean?
I will show you some of these pictures, but he would answer a question and smile in a frozen smile as if he was an alien being occupying human skin and hasn't figured out how to work the facial muscles yet. Whatever you're imagining, the actual image is worse.
Oh my gosh.
And the internet blew up after his first answer where he attempted to smile and it looked like he was getting a prostate exam.
Oh my gosh.
At the very
really?
Same time. I kid you not.
Oh Lord. Okay.
They like to talk about winners and losers, so I'm just going to give my personal impression and not rehash what you could find on the internet.
Okay, I'm ready to go.
I think most surprising to me was Mike Pence. So not that my opinion of Pence has changed a ton.
Okay.
He was still up there Bible thumping and you know who Pence is.
Yes.
But he showed more of a spine and strength than I've ever seen him do before. He has an active hatred for Vivek Ramaswamy.
Ooh.
Hates the guy.
All right, Pence. We
and
might have something in common.
A lot of his comments were directed at him, mm-hmm. and Pence had some awkward moments for sure. But I would just say that my expectations of him were rock bottom.
Okay.
And he did much better than rock bottom.
Good.
Which I thought was interesting. He had an attack. And in fact, Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey, actually gave a praising speech of Mike Pence for standing up during January 6th, not giving in to Trump wanting him to overturn the Constitution or suspend portions of it. So Christie gave him a rousing speech, kind of almost a eulogy, to be honest with you. And right then, when Christie starts praising Pence, I said, that's the end of Pence's campaign. Right then and there. They're not going to buy into that.
Nah.
Tim Scott was the biggest loser, I thought.
Lord. Oh, Lord.
He came in with high expectations of being the likable candidate and walked away as a shadow.
Who said he was the likable one? Who is saying
that's
that?
His reputation
oh.
in the Republican circles. He's the happy, jolly, friendly likable candidate. He doesn't get into the smearing. He's always talking bad about the Democrats, but he will never get into the dirt with fellow Republicans.
Okay.
So he has gotten the backing of fellow senators. We talked about in a previous episode how he's gotten a lot of endorsements from South Carolina lawmakers.
Yeah.
He's considered the likable guy.
Okay.
But he was barely a faint echo on the stage. When it was his term to speak, you can see that he was struggling with numbers and trying to memorize some things. He did not give a good performance, and I wouldn't be surprised if he was one of the first to disappear into obscurity and fade out as a result of this.
Wow.
The other big winner, and everybody agreed with this point of view, is that Nikki Haley was probably big winner.
I've heard she did well.
She handled her own. She was very comfortable up there. She was very in control. She had a couple of zingers. She used some catchy lines like, I would say they're hackneyed phrases. You know, you want something done, get a woman to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to get you the applause of the women.
Yeah.
Fine. But she did very much hold her own. The other two, Asa Hutchinson and Doug Burgum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it wasn't for Doug Burgum's eyebrows, I wouldn't have even known
they were
he
there.
Was.
Okay.
So they were non-entities in this, but Vivek Ramaswamy, he stood in the middle.
Oh my goodness.
And this is the guy who was singly the most annoying, unlikable individual that I have ever seen since Donald Trump. He was trying to out-Donald Donald himself with obnoxiousness on the stage, interrupting everybody, saying the most outlandish things. Like he went up there and said, we need to frack, burn, and drill. I mean, he called climate change a hoax. He is leaning in to the most extreme of the MAGA Republicans, parroting everything they had to say. There was one shot where DeSantis was speaking, and DeSantis was standing right next to Vivek. You could see Ramaswamy's hand in that person's shot. His hand was reaching out, waving in the air, up and down. And so this candidate was trying to give a response, and there is Ramaswamy's hand
just tacky,
waving on the side of the screen. I thought there were going to be punches thrown, to be quite honest with you.
That's what it sounds like. It sounds like there probably should have been some type of etiquette training before he approaches a stage.
Well, I do encourage you to watch the next one. I don't know when it is, but we may have to have a watch party because I think it is important to see what's going on.
All right, so let's talk about the article that came out in the state paper, State House Scorecard. Everybody loves a scorecard.
Oh my.
Yes. So which South Carolina lawmakers got the most bills turned into law this year? So let me back up and help all of us. When you vote, you put an individual into an office or a seat that is supposed to go to the state house and work on your behalf. Interests, your morals and values, your ethics, your concerns should be portrayed in the laws that get passed. That's what you want. What you don't want is for them to go and sit and not be active. Votes matter. Do you ever wonder, like, how is it that you have some politicians that will actively say, hey, I need your vote, I need your vote, but then when they get in the House and the Senate, they don't vote? I think that's a bit much. All right.
It's so also something to watch attendance records, too.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, and I think we should probably find a way to publicly show participation in these votes.
Yes. Because I don't know another job that we lay people can do, right? Where we can not show up, not be productive, don't hit the objectives, and still get to keep our job. I mean, this is like one of the only ones that I know, and I'm going to give you just some insight. I broke this score report down, male, female. I looked at the House and the Senate.
Well, let's be clear what this report is measuring.
So what it is going to show is, and let me back up and say this, as a disclaimer, because the certain individual did not pass a bill or did not co-sign a bill, it does not mean that they were ineffective in their role. It just means that they don't have any bills on the floor. So what this scorecard does is it shows you what bill that a policymaker originated.
Okay, so they're the primary creator of this bill.
Your thought process, you and a couple of other people probably went in, came up with this bill because you saw the need for it, right? And then it also shows if you taglined or if you co-signed with somebody else, so you tag team. So let's just say I started a bill, you jumped on that bill, both of our names would be on that, and
but
that would
you're
show.
You're the originator.
But I'm the originator, so it's mine.
Yes.
And then it shows how effective I was to get that passed. what this report showed for a lot is that there are a lot of bills that have been put on the floor of the House and the Senate, but the passing rate is down. I don't think we're being productive enough. What we hear is you hear bipartisan, and you need somebody who's going to be able to work with both parties to get the end result met. I'm not sure that we've been effective in doing that these last past election years. Now, you all need to go and find this article and look for yourself to look for your senators and see what they pulled out. I got Billy Garrett.
Okay, so Senator Billy Garrett from Greenwood and McCormick.
Say it again. Mm-hmm. Greenwood and McCormick. Senator Billy Garrett introduced 6 bills. Senator Billy Garrett was able to pass 0. Now, we know that there probably were some contributing factors, but that's just the number to put out. All right, so let's talk House.
Representative John McCravey from Greenwood. What is his record?
Had 6 bills introduced, 0 passed.
Okay, so in line with Senator Billy Garrett. And then there's another local representative, Daniel Gibson.
That is correct.
Who's part of Greenwood and also in McCormick.
Correct.
What is his ratio, win rate?
Representative Daniel Gibson, 0.
0 what?
0 were originated by representative.
Oh, he wrote nothing.
Correct.
Okay.
And he passed.
Well, if you wrote nothing, you're passing nothing.
0. Great. You're good at math. 0.
I do have a degree in math.
So,
now, as you said in the caveat, that's not the only measure of a legislator's effectiveness, because I'm
correct.
Sure we'll find some Democrats throughout the state with similar numbers. When I think about what is the job of an elected representative, I think of it being 4 things. 1, to write bills.
I do.
2, I to vote on bills.
I agree.
3, to work on a budget and pass a budget for the state. And then 4, I'll call miscellaneous, meaning helping your community out, doing events, answering phone calls, helping people through various bureaucratic red tape. I mean, that's just the miscellaneous category of being a community servant.
I agree.
So this is a measurement of one of those, the number of bills you've written and passed. And
yes.
We don't have a very good track record here
we
in
don't.
Greenwood. All right.
So I think it's important for voters to pull down that scorecard. The scorecard isn't private. And before you show up to any polls to cast a vote, you need to recognize what the individual that you're going to vote for has done for you in the time frame that they've served, or recognize what they have not done for you
A link to that data will be provided in the show notes, so you can go take a look at your South Carolina representation and see how hard they are working on the legislative side of their job.
And I know it's difficult because you're bringing in different groups of people with a little more than 20% of the bills presented in the House being passed. We have work to do, and I think that by diversifying individuals in the House, that might help.
And with that, we are going to wrap up this episode of Black, White, and Blue in the South. If you, too, are a blue dot in a red sea, keep up the fight, keep up the faith. Progress is not won in a day, but rather over a lifetime of struggle and focus. We benefit today from the efforts of those who fought decades ago.
Yes.
We owe it to them to pay it forward.
Yes. The end.
The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media and copyright 2023, all rights reserved.